This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I am Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union with 125,000 members and nearly 50,000 retirees. We are part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast. Simply go to the podcast app on your smartphone or tablet and search for DC 37 State of the Union. Members, there are now more ways to stay in touch with your union. You can check out our website, www.dc37.net. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you have any comments about our show or would like us to help promote a community event, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. That's one word, stateoftheunion@dc37.net. The CUNY, City University of New York School of Labor and Urban Studies, recently celebrated its first graduating class after expanding from the Joseph F. Murphy Institute for Worker Education and Labor Studies. There is a mouthful for you. 4 years ago, Nicholas Pineda began taking classes at the school. Earlier this month, the local 2627 members spoke at the inaugural commencement ceremony as the class representative. He joins us in the studio. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
What was your interest in getting continuing your education at the CUNY School of Labor and Urban Studies?
Well, I had already been in school very, very slowly, taking one class at a time since 1997. 1999, I entered CUNY. And so DC 37 had a labor certificate section of classes that offered you up to 16 credits applicable towards your degree. So that's what got the ball rolling for me. That's what got me in the door. And that's what I actually was just trying to go in and learn about business. And the certificate was in labor, which is connected to business.
Right.
And I was having a lot of trouble at my job, and I started learning how to fix those issues.
You mean through the school you learned how to fix these issues?
Through the school, I learned. We had a class in litigation, class in organizing, class in labor law. In labor history, I had no idea all the things that the labor movement had been involved in until I got to that class. I was one of those people on the fence about unions, and I became very passionate about it.
So it was actually you were just trying to get through and get to a diploma.
Correct.
And if I may be so bold, your eyes were opened by what you saw and experienced there.
It's exactly what I think school should be. I mean, if you can find your passion in school, I try to, you know, tell my daughter that, you know, you want to love what you're doing if you can, but if not, you just got to pay the bills. And I was paying the bills, you know, having jobs. But when I got into the labor, well, and also I was the real impetus to really being passionate was that I was going through a lot. I was working in Department of Transportation, and I had a tyrant for a supervisor, and he was unstoppable. No matter how you reported him, and come to find out, he'd been getting away with this for 30 years at the agency. And so I had no recourse. I was depressed, and that school woke me up, gave me life. From the instructors to the instruction, you know, like, okay, this is how you form a committee. This is how you get a group of people to back you when no one else will back you. This is what the union is there for. And I was able to leverage the union and get out of there. And I mean, I'm starting at another position in just a couple of weeks.
You were a local 2627 member who obviously was not terribly engaged with the union prior to this experience, correct?
Correct. I mean, it really made me realize that my lack of engagement was due to lack of information. And so it made me go, okay, I mean, I literally went to the union and said, listen, I work in wireless technology. I think I could help in spreading the word about the union, because had I known from day one, I would have gone through a lot less. And what I learned, actually, that's the reason that I kept on with my education, and even why I'm sitting here, because I feel like everybody needs to know. Everybody needs to know what's available. Everybody needs to know what the unions can do for you, especially in this crazy Trump climate that we're in. The unions, I was telling someone the other day, seem like the last bastion of hope. It's the counter to the attack that we're under.
How did you become interested? How did you become a city worker?
I was looking for job security, and city offered, allegedly offered, plenty of that. I think it's Franklin Roosevelt. There's a saying that goes, you know, he who will trade security for freedom for security deserves neither. I lived that. I had plenty of freedom at my last job, and I left it for security, and I lost both. I lost both security and freedom, and I had to basically felt like start from scratch. I literally was asking myself, what did I do to get here? I was questioning all of my life choices, and then came Murphy Institute / the School of Labor and Urban Studies, June Cumberbatch, Steve Greenfeld, our dean, Mancios, people that really cared not only about education, but about labor and unions and what the movement represented. I mean, one of my professors, I didn't even know while I was in class with him that he was this legendary labor historian at Ott.
Oh, Ott is a legendary labor historian.
So
and
we're sitting
on this show many times.
Yeah, we're sitting in the room with these people and have no clue that, I mean, it's like going to train and to going to basketball camp and Michael Jordan just happens to be some bald guy just teaching you how to, how to do a layup. And you're like, you go home and you tell somebody, this guy, Michael Jordan, was my professor. They're like, who?
Yeah.
That was literally my, what I tell people. Yeah, I was in class with Ed Ott. It was one of my favorite classes. He actually, gave me the recommendation to the scholarship that I ended up getting was through, I mean, the relationship that I ended up developing there. Again, coming in as a guy who knew nothing and then finding out, wow, like I'm in front of these giants, and I'm actually now standing on their shoulders and kind of tasked with continuing with the movement.
We're talking with Nicholas Pineda. He is a city employee who is a member of DC 37 Local 2627 and is a member of the first graduating class at the CUNY School of Labor and Urban Studies. Do you know much about how this came to be, the School of Labor and Urban Studies? Are you a person I should be talking to about some of the background on the school?
No, I am not a person you should be. I was in the thick of taking classes.
Okay.
When all of this happened, it seemed to happen very quickly. One day I was in the Murphy Institute taking classes, and the next week I'm a student of School of Labor and Urban Studies. It was just like that.
I was at CCNY for 7 years, and I was doing the 3 credits a semester thing for a while. I was working on the school paper, and I still owe Professor McKenna, I'm pretty sure, a term paper on the difference between totalitarianism and authoritarianism. And so I understand about the life of a CUNY student who's got other things going on.
Oh, yeah.
And you were able to just sort of bring it all together and make it work for a degree.
Yeah, it's not – that sounds like I'm some – like I did something without all of that support. I mean, there is – from my family to my girlfriend to the professors to the staff to the administration and class. I mean, it is a team effort. When the folks go up there at the ceremonies and thank everyone and when they say things like, you were all part of this graduating class, you were all part of us all getting here and being here today, they mean it. Because, I mean, sometimes it's finding that babysitter. Sometimes it's actually being in class with people who have their kids in class because there was nowhere else to put them. And it's the only institution that I've been in that does not heavily frown upon that. Every institution on some level has to have some kind of control. But in there, it was like, okay, we're going to work with you. We're gonna figure this out. And, I mean, I've even seen where one professor who doesn't have a particular class will leave class and take the kids that were in another class so that, hey, come on, let me take you into here. And I have some coloring books in my class. That literally happened. And that's the kind of thing that supports people being able to be educated, scholarships and things that, and the support. It's really all of that to say, a long, long way of saying it's really all about the support. It's those people that made me able to do that. And all of us able to do
coloring books?
Some professor had, I don't know why she had, I think she had children of her own.
Okay.
And she had them with her. I mean, it's really, but it's where else would that happen? You know, like where else in the world would that happen? But New York, but a school of labor and urban studies.
How has the school, how has the school increased your own activity with 26, 27 or with the
I year? Went, like I said, I went to them and said, I want to work for you. I want to do, this is my expertise. This is what I bring to the table. We're still negotiating that because one thing, you know, I learned how to negotiate. So negotiation isn't just one meeting and, you know, okay, we'll do it. It's, okay, you guys don't think that that idea is going to work. Well, let's tweak it. And so now I want to come back to them with a better idea, a better version of the idea that I have, which is to broadcast all of the meetings and make everything available to everyone at all times, because I find that, you know, I'm kind of one generation behind this digital generation. You know, I'm a little older than them, but I'm not, you know, but I'm still in the thick of it. I know technology. You know, my phone is like a limb now. And so I think that I'd like to leverage that and bring that.
So you want to work at so what you're doing with your career is you want to work in the labor movement. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely want to work in the labor movement. That's the long-term goal, and on some capacity. I work for the city now, and I really enjoy the work that I do for the city, and I don't see myself just jumping ship unless something real happens. But I do want to be way more involved than I have been, and so actually just by mistake missed this general membership meeting this past Tuesday, and that's because something major happened.
Life happens.
Life always happens, and that's the kind of stuff where I was exactly saying, if I couldn't be there physically, why couldn't I be there digitally? And that's where I'm at with that part of things. But that being said, you know, it's just I want to be at the meetings. Now I'm like, okay, now I'm right. School's over, because a lot of the things happened during school hours.
Right.
And when I needed to be writing papers and I was not going. I mean, when I finally became a good student, I told people, I'm like, becoming a good student meant becoming a worse friend. Or a worse, you know, social person. I'm not out there. I'm in doing my papers and doing my work.
We've got about 2 minutes left. What was the most significant thing you did not know about the labor movement before you took the classes at the school?
How much the labor movement was responsible for and involved in. The labor movement was right there on the front lines of the civil rights movement.
Yes, it was.
Women's rights. Workers' rights. I had no idea that when Martin Luther King was assassinated, that he was starting to join the labor movements in helping those sanitation workers?
Absolutely.
Sanitation workers.
And those were AFSCME sanitation workers, which is the National Union of DC 37.
That's the kind of stuff. I was like, wait a minute, you guys were right there?
Right.
You know, it's kind of like that Where's Waldo or you know, like that, like Forrest Gump, like, oh, he was there too.
Right.
It's like that. Like they were there. So it's that. That's the one thing I learned, and how powerful they have been and how much they've been under attack, but more that they were there.
Nicholas Pineda is a recent graduate of the CUNY School of Labor and Urban Studies. This was actually he's one of the first graduates, right?
Yes, first inaugural class.
And congratulations to you.
Thank you.
I wish may the force be with you and your union activism. And we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Thank you.
We're back. The city council and Mayor de Blasio recently had agreement on a city budget, the city budget for fiscal year 2020. Joining us by phone to talk about the accomplishments of the union and what it means for all New Yorkers is DC 37's political action director, Jeremy John. Welcome back, sir.
How are you, Chris?
I think we're good, right? I think we had a good budget year. We waged campaigns, and I think they heard us loud and clear. Why don't you tell us how?
Yeah, this was a very productive budget session. My compliments to the mayor and to the speaker of the city council for their leadership in making sure that the public sector workforce in New York City was respected and that it was reflected in the budget. A lot of the work that we did prior to the budget process was making sure that we provided evidence that there were shortfalls throughout the entire workforce system, where public sector, there were gaps in the public sector workforce. And they heard us loud and clear, and they took decisive action in remedying a lot of those things.
Well, when there is a deficiency in staffing, for example, in a place like Parks and Recreation, that means we ain't got great parks, right?
Correct. And, you know, one of the more productive things that we did this year was we participated and we joined the Play Fair Coalition. And this was an amalgamation of community advocates, us, labor unions, and other advocacy groups to make sure that the parks were taken care of. And a large degree of that is making sure that we have the workforce to take care of our parks, right? And we are proud that the mayor has baselined, meaning made permanent, over 150 workers, our gardeners, our seasonal parks workers. He's increased our urban parks rangers and our PEP officers, the folks who actually maintain the security within the parks. So we are very, very, happy with what turned out through the budget process.
And in addition to parks, what else was worth noting in terms of accomplishments in the budget?
So, you know, the libraries are the cornerstone and the backbone to many of our communities, basically for the services that they provide. And we were able to get a $33 million boost to our staffing.
That's huge.
Significant.
That was a huge
It's a historic number. If you recall, our libraries took a massive hit during the Bloomberg administration. And over the last several years, we've made incremental changes in terms of the funding that's come from the city to remedy a lot of those deficiencies that were created under that administration. And to his credit, once again, the mayor and the speaker of the city council made sure to reinforce our communities by funding libraries.
Well, you know, it's kind of amazing to me that actually came to pass, the cutting of library budgets. If you talk to any of our members, right, or our leaders who are involved with the libraries, they will tell you this amazing range of things that libraries are actually doing now. And you'll sit there and you say, well, this isn't just about a book. This is about a whole range of community services.
And one of the big community services that the libraries will be relied on is the upcoming census. Like I said, libraries are the backbone of communities.
Right.
And the census will happen next year, the 2020 year, and there will be census officers in libraries throughout the year to make sure that our residents and our members know how to fill out those forms, because, you know, those forms can be complicated. They can be long. And that's a service. That's an example of a service that the libraries will be providing.
And we also are dealing with the census issue in terms of making sure that if we don't get every person counted, we lose money and we lose funds that for the city and for the state, correct?
Absolutely. Federal funds are predicated on the census. And if we are undercounted, New York is projected to lose two congressional seats. And that with that two congressional seats means that there's a direct correlation to a population loss. If we lose any money, we're talking about losing public workforce. We're talking about a reduction in the infrastructure that's greatly needed for our city, the services that are provided to our city, the critical care needs, the safety net programs that are critical to our communities. Those are things that will essentially be on the chopping block. And it will put more of a burden on our city and our state budgets. So it's important that everyone gets counted. It's important that everyone is not afraid to be counted during this process, because there's so many ways in which we can suffer long term.
We also talked about throughout the budget negotiations process, we also expressed our concern that the city was losing revenue because of shortages in hiring and the undermanned workforce. What were we able to impress upon the council and the mayor about that?
One of the things that we were very happy to achieve is the assessors, the folks that take stock and who do the analysis as to what a property is worth and the amount of money a property owner or a business owner should be paying the city in property taxes. We were shorthand. We were short in throughout the city. There are 110 assessors for a city that has over 8 million people.
That's unbelievable.
Yes.
Those are hardworking people.
Yes, they are. But we were happy to achieve. We've got eight assessors that are being added to the tax commission, and an additional 10 that are going to be in the Department of Finance. Like, those are significant, right? Because for so long, because of the workload that's on the current crop of assessors, we are missing out on the opportunity to fairly make an assessment on each individual property within the city. Because of that fact, we were losing revenue. Our properties in the city were being undervalued because we were not taking a hard look and a proper look at the true assessment value. Because of the additional workforce, we are now going to be able to generate revenue for the city, because we'll have more eyes, we'll have more seasoned professionals taking a look at the actual value of property.
Can you talk a little bit about, we have been pushing and have been advocates for the Green New Deal that has been talked about throughout the city. Mm-hmm. What is it that we're looking for?
So the city's version of the Green New Deal is the retrofitting of large buildings that are over 25,000 square feet, who are the largest polluters in the city of New York, and the emissions. What we've asked for in that proposal, which we were happy to pass 2 months ago under the leadership of Councilmember Constantinides, was for each of those buildings to be retrofitted so that we can reduce the emissions of each building. And by doing that, there's also a larger requirement on the city workforce to make sure that those efficiencies are done in a true and productive way, and they are up to standard with the law. And because of that, we were able to get additional workers. We've gotten some of the energy auditors. We've gotten some of the inspectors. More jobs for those inspectors, and we were happy that the mayor put $60 million towards securing that project and made sure that there's proper enforcement for the project.
Anything else we should be talking about on the city level in terms of what was accomplished in this budget?
I mean, one of the outstanding things that it's not really outstanding, we reached an agreement with the city, is pay parity for early childhood workers. There are staffers that are particularly teachers who are not making up to the same level as their counterparts in the Department of Education. There's a commitment from the city that they will be come to the negotiating table to make sure that pay parity is achieved. There's something that DC 37 is one of the leading advocates on. These are our men and women in that work in daycare centers,
right,
take care of our kids,
right,
who provide safety and security to these kids, and who are the first teachers for these kids. So we are working hard to make sure that they achieve pay parity.
And in terms of, I know that this is not that the state is working on a different level, but we just finished the state legislative season. How overall were you okay with how that turned out?
Yes, I think the new Senate majority has gone a long way in achieving a lot of progressive ideals that we in labor and we in the advocate community have been working on for decades. One of the prouder moments for me and for this union in particular is the changes to the rent regulation laws that just happened earlier this month. This is something that DC 37 has been advocating on behalf of our members since the 90s to make sure that affordable housing is maintained and secured in the city. And because of that leadership that happened in the Senate majority and also in the Assembly, those laws were passed. And it goes a long way to making sure that New York City stays affordable. And that's one of the bigger accomplishments that I think that we were happy to be an advocate for and to see passed this year on the state level.
Jeremy John is DC 37's political action director. It is always a pleasure to have a chat with you, sir. Sounds like we did very well in the New York City budget process. Thank you very much.
This was a good year for us, Chris. Thank you very much.
All right. That's just about all the time we have for this show. I just want to do a couple of announcements before we go. Beginning in July, the Education Fund application for the fall will be available to you on www.dc37.net. For more information, just visit the website or call 212-815-1700. And the Municipal Employee Legal Services reminds you that they provide legal representation when applying for citizenship. For more information, please call 212-815-1818. Remember, if you have any comments about today's show or any of our shows, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. I want to thank my guests, Nicholas Pineda, recent graduate of CUNY's School of Labor and Urban Studies, and DC 37 Political Action Director Jeremy John. The producer of this show is Rudy Orozco. The engineer is Andrea Minocchio. I am Chris Policano. Until next time, ciao.